I'm Amy Lana. I'm at the University of Missouri Columbia. I'm the head of the Monographs Acquisitions Unit. We're also responsible for most base content. Thank you for having us here today. We appreciate your interest in most base. Glad you're on board. With me today, I have three colleagues. I have Barry Acock, who is our Digital Resources Librarian, Jackie Blonagin, who is also a Digital Resources Librarian, and Hardy Pottinger, who I think many of you know from the UM's Library Systems Office. We're going to dive pretty much right into it. I think you all have the outline of what we're going to do today. The first part of the presentation is just going to introduce you to the DSpace platform, which is the platform on which MoSpace runs, and then give you a quick tour of MoSpace itself. After the break, for those who are interested in staying to learn how to use MoSpace, that'll be the more technical. I'll show you how to create communities, collections, items. Mary will talk about metadata and all that. If you've not seen it yet, this is the MoSpace homepage and the URL. It is a secure server, the HTTPS. If anyone forgets to put the S on the HTTP, it should redirect you anyway, but if you have a problem, then that's probably why. You'll notice we do have you set up here at the bottom. We have community set up for you. We'll talk about more about that in a bit. But let me give you some background on DSpace itself. DSpace, the idea of DSpace was birthed in 1997. At MIT when the director of the libraries was talking to a faculty member who was saying, well, I realized the other day if my PC ever crashes, my entire life's work is gone. And so she said, well, we must develop something that can do better for you than that. And so there was a long development process, and the code was finally released in 2002. MIT's repository is itself called DSpace. So there's a DSpace repository as well as DSpace. Space the platform. It is open source, has a growing community of developers. It's really quite impressive how much developers have done on their own in order to get this thing running. Something nice about DSpace, and one of the reasons why DSpace was chosen for the platform, is that it is very adaptable. You can use themes with it, you can make it look how you want, to a certain extent make it function how you want, so it's very attractive that way. That kind of flexibility was certainly a factor. We also chose DSpace because it is open source. It's free in the sense of, you know, free puppies. We do all devote staff time. There is server space, but we're not dependent on a vendor for our hosted solution, and we're not dependent on them, especially for their IT ticket queue. We're very fortunate we have our own ticket queue with us today, and that makes things go a lot faster on our end, honestly. DSpace offers permanent locators. This means when an item goes into MoSpace and you get a URL attached to it, that URL is permanent. It will never change, so it can always be cited on CVs, on websites. You'll never have to worry about updating the URL. MoSpace is full text searchable, so things are findable very easily. And then it's very user-friendly on both the front and back ends. The back end, the server side, yes, you do need to have some server experience, but it's not awful from what I understand. The front end, it's a wizard-style submission template, so it's very easy for someone to step through the process. There's very little required information when you do an item record. So you can, if you don't know a field, you can skip it, and that makes it very fun. If you have more interest in DSpace, and I'm sorry I didn't mention that these slides will be posted in MoSpace when we're done today, as well as video. The video, you'll notice, is pointed at the screen. It's not capturing any of you. But if you'd rather not have the video posted, let us know, and we'll make sure not to put it up. So DSpace resources, extra places you can go to learn more about DSpace, learn about the development, what they're doing, in terms of iterations and versions, and then three mailing lists that you could subscribe to if you're very interested. D DSpace General is for someone like me who has not so much of a tech background, but just kind of wants to tune into what's happening. DSpace Tech is for the more technical-sided people. And then DSpace Devel is for the true developers, and they get into some pretty weighty conversations. There's, in fact, a fourth list, which I understand is developers one step up even, people who are very hardcore into server and programming and the like. So this brings us to MoSpace. MoSpace was designed to be a repository of scholarly works by faculty, staff, and students of the University of Missouri system. Some things you need to think about as you move forward with your DSpace instance. First thing is collection development policy. We do not have one overarching collection development policy. We have one at Columbia, Kansas City has one, and certainly you should develop your own. Doing this from the start, you're all librarians, you know it's a good idea just to have a policy in place before you start anything. You also want to think about the structure of your MoSpace community. It's much easier to start with a structure which you can adhere to through the course of your development than to try and change collections and communities. It's possible, but it's complicated, and it involves some work on the back end. So you want to try and map out what you're going to do first. What Mary has done for us in Columbia, is she went through the University of Missouri Columbia's campus structure and created a website which gives us our MoSpace structure. Basically, it reflects the structure from campus level down to college, and division level, down to department level, and so on. Sorry, this is so slow. There it is. Those are our naming standards. Subtle going. Same thing. How about that? My apologies. No. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't quite have it for you. But you can, as I said, these will be on the website, and I'll fix that URL. And you can go to our website and see that it lays out very clearly how to structure our MoSpace site, and we follow that to the T. There's also standards for naming the communities and collections that we adhere to, so that we have a very consistent look and feel to all our collections and communities. So that was just a couple of things to think about. You also want to think about your metadata requirements. What is going to be the basic amount of metadata? What are your basic fields that you want to have attached to each item? Staffing and workflow. Staffing is something that people ask us about a lot. Our MoSpace team, the ones who are actually working with MoSpace, consist of myself working probably anywhere from 15 to 30 hours a week, depending on what's going on. I have two staff members who help me with content acquisition. They work 10 hours a week or less. We currently have one graduate fellow who works 10 hours a week, and that's the four of us on the acquisition side. Cataloging side, we have Mary and Jackie, who work, again, flexible hours, depending on the needs, but both part-time on it. Mary Ammon, right? Mm-hmm. One person about 10 hours a week on the cataloging side there as well. And that's essentially it. Hardy and his fellows at LSO do the back-end support, but we're not a full-time operation. That said, in just over 2.5 years, almost 2.5 years, we're approaching 8,500 individual titles in MoSpace. So you can build very quickly without having a whole lot of staff devoting time to this. So it's something to think about. The workflow I'll go into a little more as we get into the actual building of community and collections. But really it starts with acquisitions. We find the content, we do things like check copyright, request pre-prints and post-prints if necessary. And then we enter the items into MoSpace with some basic metadata, and then alert cataloging that there is a new item for them to review. And then they go back and enhance the metadata. The point at which the item is viewable by the public, unless we put some kind of restriction on it, is the point at which the acquisitions people hit submit this item. So it's almost instantaneously accessible unless you make provision otherwise. So it's something to think about too, whether you want things visible immediately or not. Those are the basic ideas of behind MoSpace and what you want to do to start developing it. Hardy's going to talk about the architecture and some of the more technical details behind MoSpace.
I'll just go through this. I know there's a mixed audience, but not everyone's going to be as interested in the tech stuff. But I want to go ahead, these questions come up, so I want to go ahead and cover it. The front end for MoSpace is provided by the same Apache server that runs the digital library and other websites that are on the digital library server that also maintains. And that's just, it's a reverse proxy front end to the Tomcat server, which is actually what DSpace is a Tomcat application. And the authentication for logging in and using the system is provided by the UM-wide Shibboleth server. It's the same thing that provides the single sign-on for Merlin. So it's the same service. The nice thing from that is if you're logged into Merlin already, you can, the session transfers over into MoSpace and the other way around. The backend is database provided by Oracle, and that's maintained by the UM Division of IT. That's backed up and for multiple locations. It's the same stuff that does Blackboard for UM. Let's see, the asset store, which is where all the actual bit streams, all the objects that are stored in MoSpace, is stored on the Division of IT's Tier 2 SANs, the cheaper SAN that they provide. And that's mirrored between MU and MSD. So again, there's backup to that. And then all the other application stuff is all hosted on the digital library server, which is a Red Hat box. And a little bit about the development process. The DSpace project has switched over to a time-based release structure, and they release every 9 months. We at LSO are releasing a new iteration of MoSpace every 3 months, which means we gather up tickets that come into us. We figure out what we can fit into short-term or long-term process. We work on all of it, but every 3 months we'll release a new version. We're getting set to release a new version this weekend. And the biggest noticeable change you'll see, and we can go over the details later, but the biggest change you'll notice is the color change, because UM changed their global navigation to more of a blue color, so we wanted to match. There's a lot of other functional stuff that's to do with it, but the most noticeable one is the color. We're going to continue in that process. The first iteration that follows a DSpace release will upgrade to the newest version. So the next iteration that we're going to be doing here is going to upgrade to DSpace 1.7. And I am actively involved in the DSpace development process. I'm not a committer, and I'm, you know, I my skills as a Java coder are still growing, but I actively participate in the developer discussion that I encourage every week. Someone changed it. I was going to have fun changing that. There was a typo in the title, and I was going to change it. We're a work in progress. The DSpace was built as a repository for born digital materials, but we are working with others to add more digital library type material to MoSpace. The big things that we're working on are page turning for digitized books, and pan and zoom for large images like maps, and with the idea of eventually using that same architecture for streaming. And we have a good handle on a project that is already working with DSpace. There's a library in Brazil producing a digital library called Brasiliana, and they are using DSpace to do these types of things. They're about to release their source code. They're going to let us have a sneak peek at that source code. And I'm looking forward to getting in to that in the next 3 months. And one other thing I wanted to make clear, we've been working with MU to collaborate on some of the things that we do. And the big thing that we've worked on is backloading of electronic theses and dissertations. And that was a real collaboration between MU Libraries and us. And if you've got staff with an XML or XSLT experience, we could definitely work together on similar processes to load batch-load information. The theming structure for DSpace is XSLT-based theme. And so if you've got someone that's just chomping to change the way your area looks, we can definitely work together on setting up an individualized theme that you can control. That's my bit. You guys have any technical questions?
I can add you a quick one. Yeah. The asset store, you're talking that's where the objects are, so if we engaged in this, we would be storing stuff on MU storage space, the Tier 2 SAN, I think you called it, and mirrored at Raleigh, correct?
Correct.
What are the limitations? Because we've run into it in the past, people say, you have how much stuff?
There is no theoretical limitation.
I mean, there's physical limitations that, I mean, you run out of space.
Right. We need a heads up on any large scale growth, because it will take time to rack, the individual storage. And in the past, when we were talking to them, they said, oh, we can have that space for you in a matter of minutes. That really translates to about, they need at a minimum 2 weeks for large amounts of data. We have currently 1 terabyte set aside for MoSpace.
1 terabyte?
Yes, 1 terabyte. The MoSpace takes up 40 gigabytes, so it's, those PDF files don't take up a whole lot of room. There are some movie files. The storage space went up in the last week from 38 to 40, so there's more stuff coming. But it's currently earmarked with 1 terabyte. And the back end architecture is such that if you fill up one space, you just add more space and tell it to put new stuff in the new space. So that SAN can grow indefinitely. It's an EMC-based SAN, and it uses really cheap drives that they shove in there, and it's, we just need to give them a heads up. As firm as a commitment as you get without writing from the UMIT Division of IT people that this space is going to be there forever and as much space as needed.
Which means not a comment on anything you're saying. We're going to have to ask them specifics when we have something specific in mind. In other words, 100,000 records and 10 terabytes worth of digitized information.
More than a terabyte.
And one last one, I'm not sure. Does Google crawl MoSpace?
Yes, all of us.
Google and Google Scholar.
So anything put in there will show up on a Google search.
Correct. It's getting better. The DSpace 1.7 release, which we're going to go to in the next 3 months, has with it some additional metadata tags to it to make Google Scholar's job easier, and will allow it to add more significant metadata to the records that it's crawling already. Google Scholar likes to be able to find PDF files and pulls its metadata from that. But there's a way to, that they've worked out with the DSpace folks where they can actually look at some metadata tags, which is kind of a new thing for Google. They don't really like to look at tags to find their metadata. But it, the long story short is that things are getting better. The metadata will get better, but currently Google is constantly crawling that server.
Well, it actually leads to one more question, and sort of that's a rights management thing. Real world situation when we digitize theses. We had a dissertation that was digitized that had to be pulled because it had proprietary information. The thesis was of a technical nature, and this is information that would have interfered with patents and stuff. Yet, wanting to back up things and having a central storage place is desirable. Is there a way to, I mean, how is rights management? Not how does it work, is there a rights management aspect so you could not only prevent Google from crawling, but it won't even see it because it can't get through some sort of security barrier?
Yes.
I mean, you mentioned that at some point you say publish this,
right,
and it goes out.
Right.
But is there some way to say publish this, but don't let anybody see it?
Yes.
Maybe the metadata, but not the actual object.
Yes, and that's exactly it. It is there are ways to limit, and part of the nice thing about Shibboleth is it lets us identify people based on their campus, and in theory we can even go down to a department level. But currently. MU's using the different levels to identify access based on whether you're a UM student, so you have a login at all, or if you're an MU student, or an MU in person, staff, faculty or staff or student. And so those are different levels that you could limit. You could also limit access to that and just you know, preserve it, but not make it visible to anyone except administrators.
Because we have, I know, in archive land, materials that would be nice to have digital backups, but we wouldn't, by law, even be allowed to give access in a lot of cases, correct?
Mm-hmm. Okay. There is another repository that we've built for preservation purposes. It's another instance of DSpace. We're going to use it for backing up preservation TIFFs that we don't intend to release to the public or other large files that for whatever reason we can't release. And that exists as well, so we can talk to you about large scale preservation. We already do that, ELSO already does that for other campuses and for MU archives. And that stuff's like all that stuff is going to go into a dark archive.
It's part of the thing you want to remember is that MoSpace is intended to be open access. Yeah, we do restrict some things, like some of our UTDs as well have to be restricted. But really our desire is to make as much information possible, accessible as possible.
You mentioned the Google Scholar, adding tags and make things easy for Google Scholar. And get a hold of it. But I'm assuming that this would just mean if anybody just playing Google, so they'll be able to find some too. How about Google Books? I know that I've gone on Google Books and I found looking at articles, journals, or magazines on there too, and I don't know what that would fit. I found, I guess, dissertations also, something like that. Do you know, is that going to go into that too?
I think Google Books mainly is from their big scanning. I don't know the exact details of where that went, but they made a deal with several universities to scan everything they have. And I'm pretty sure that's what mostly is going into Google Books. Google itself does, I mean, besides Google Scholar, also Google Crawler, it's our site, so you can just Google through and hit most based on.
So let's take a look at MoSpace itself. So I showed you on the first slide, this is the URL. You can drop the XMLUI part, it'll append itself automatically. Homepage, there's pictures of each campus. If you'd like a different picture of this campus, talk to Hardy. You can put a different one in. Basic navigation, search, browse, add to MoSpace, about and help. Login, I'm going to skip for the moment. search box, a basic search box here on the left at the top. This is just a, you know, your simple search. You type in corn, you're gonna get 5,000 hits. The advanced search is a little bit better. It allows you to narrow by collections, communities, some of the keywords. Backwards, just a little bit better. So you can search all of MoSpace. You can search one of the three main communities. And then you can search within each thing. Full text, you can just look at the abstracts and so on.
Where do the abstracts go on from?
There is an abstract field in each item.
So if we created content, we would be, whoever we created the web.
Yes. Your browse, your basic browse screen, and again, this is what anyone who stumbles upon MoSpace will see. You can browse all the communities and collections. You can browse by issue date, authors, titles, and subjects. These last three browse options, discipline, semester, and advisor, are unique to ETDs. There are fields that our graduate school was including on their site when they hosted the ETDs, and they wanted that capability transferred over, so we did. Part of our blurb about what MoSpace is, again, a nice big search box in case anyone missed the one up on the left, and then communities and a link to Missouri S&T's area as well. Now the login, people say, ask, do I have to create an account? And the answer is no. You don't have to create an account, whether you're a UM user or a person out in the public, in order to browse MoSpace to see items, files, etc. Reasons why you'd want to create an account, anyone who is going to be actually working in MoSpace definitely needs an account. If you want to be able to access the administrative controls, for instance, if you have someone who's not regularly working in MoSpace but still might need to get in, that person would want an account. As Hardy mentioned, you have a choice of using either Shibboleth or password authentication. For anyone with a UM or MU, UMSL type email account, you must use Shibboleth. It won't let you use that email address to register a passworded type account. Anyone who doesn't have that kind of account or wants to use like a Gmail account, then they can set up a passworded account. So Shibboleth is really just the way to go for all of us. And it's your standard login. Had to change our password yesterday. Okay, so, and then you'll see up at the upper right here, it recognizes me. And then on the lower, on the left nav, it's given me some new options. It allows me to edit my profile, which is basically my name and my email address, my phone number. It allows me to look at my submission history, whether I have something going. You can save submissions in the middle of creating them, come back to them, so this is where I'd access that. And then these administrative controls. The first option here is people. You also see these, this referred to as e-people in any documentation you might see. These are the people with accounts in MoSpace. So you can see Denise Adkins, who's one of our library science instructors, has an account. Adrian Arden, who's one of my staff members. Mary's up there, and so on. And this is where you can add new e-people if you're an administrator. If you need to add, say, a student to be able to have access, you can add them here. You can browse and search as you need to. The e-people are also handy in that when you're, if you do ever have to restrict access to a collection, like to those ETDs, then defining them here can help too. Groups function much like e-people, except they are groups. So here's our administrator group. This under review community collection, this is something we just created in, as a holding space, kind of as a test space. And you see that there's only 5 members, and that's because we restricted access to that because it's not material that's ready to be pushed out to the public yet. Anonymous is an empty group. You can assign an anonymous group to permissions. The rest of these are all collections. And each step, or there are three phases to each collection. You can have people who can submit, you can have people who can read, you can have people who can, what's the, edit, that's what it is. And then you can define those permissions for each of those things at the collection level. And when we get to the practical part of this, I can show you how to do that. But this is how you can keep track of who's in what group. Authorizations, this is where you can edit authorizations for people and for each community and collection. So what you would essentially do is you go into, let's just do this one, Energy Summit, and you can see that the read access is anonymous. Anyone can read materials here. That's read at the collection level, item read and bitstream read. You can go into an item and open files, see it all. And then add items is this collection group. The registries, I'm going to pass for the moment. This is having to do with the metadata schemas that Mary will talk about in a little while. Items, this allows you to find an item, all MoSpace items begin with 10355. And then everything after the slash is the identifier for an individual item. At this point, bring one up and it shows you an item in the edit status. Withdrawn items, we have had occasion to withdraw a few things, and this is where they can sit. Withdrawn items are still in MoSpace. They are not accessible to the public. They don't, the metadata doesn't even show up. But they're there in case we can ever put them back. The other option you have with items that need to come out is called expunging, and that is permanent. That is a delete key. Control panel doesn't get used much, but if you will ever get curious about the job information for MoSpace, there it is. Statistics. There are some statistics built in to MoSpace. They do give you very general overviews. You can also get statistics at the item level. To find statistics at the item level, all you need to do is put slash statistics at the end. I picked an invalid number, but that will give you statistics. You can also go into items. Find. And you can see the statistics. From within items. Again, this gives you the general overview, but you can get to specific items. There is a slightly better statistics package that gives you different information that I'll show you at the very end of the presentation for those who need to keep statistics. Finally, in our navigation, there's this import metadata option. With this current version of DSpace 1.6, they gave you the option of batch metadata editing, which people were very excited about. It allows you to export metadata for a group of items, edit the metadata, and import it back in. There are also some other functionalities associated with it. Mary will talk a little more about that later. Your homepage looks like this. It's just a logo I picked up from your printing services site. You can change that very easily, make it whatever you want. And as Hardy said, if you want to make the page look completely different, then that's possible as well. Each community has the same box, allowing you to search directly within that community. And then it gives you a number of browse options as well. Anything below hand here would be recent submissions. They come up pretty well. Something I did want to show you at the top of your handout, I gave you the personalized URI for your instance of MoSpace, because no one wants to remember these numbers. So if you want to send someone directly to your home page, after the edu slash, just put in UMSL and it'll bring you straight here. So if you want to direct someone very specifically to this page to find things, you can. Once you're in a community, you do have further options in the left navigation. You can edit the community, you can export it if you found the need to do that. Again, you can export the metadata for batch loading. You can create a collection, and you can create a subcommunity. The way MoSpace terminology works is that, if you think of it at the system and the four campuses, we are top-level communities. Within each community are subcommunities, for instance, the colleges, the divisions. And then each of those subcommunities can have a subcommunity, well, an unlimited number of subcommunities itself. So all your departments are subcommunities. Within that lowest level of subcommunity are the collections. We have three standard collection names, presentations, publications, and electronic theses and dissertations. And it's in those three collections that the items themselves reside. Okay, so it's a very hierarchical structure. Visually, if we go to a little more developed, look at the system page, you see the system with the system logo, its subcommunities, and then if you drill into the subcommunities, here are further subcommunities, and then here finally are the collections. Each of those subcommunities in each collection also has its own permanent URL. So if you wanted to say to students, go to the Missouri Energy Summit 2009 subcommunity and take a look at what's in there, you could give them that URL and it can stay on your syllabus forever. So it's very nice that way.
Is what we're seeing administrative view? That is, the end user would never see a lot of this stuff?
The only thing that would change are the navigation options on the left. Everything
that's
else.
That's they wouldn't be able to
edit or anything like that. Read. That's correct.
I just had a question. I looked at Mizzou's website, and I couldn't find MoSpace. I found it by Googling, but is there, where do the students and faculty find this, on Blackboard or on?
Usually from the library homepage. We're listed on the library's page. We're working on getting ourselves moved up. Yeah, we'd like to be on the MU homepage for sure.
Who, if any, has administrative access or capability for UMSLs on down stuff?
Anyone you want to designate.
I mean, who currently?
Currently, myself, Mary, Hardy.
Nobody at UMSL.
We added Debbie, yeah?
Yeah, pretty sure Debbie.
Debbie okay. Has administrative access at this point. Yeah.
There's probably two other people I think, and I don't know.
Yeah, so, but yeah, Debbie can add anyone, make you an administrator, or you know, we can do it. Other questions at this point? Let me show you.
Actually, one thing to say, currently it's set up similar to Merlin in that it's an honor system as far as everyone's assigned administrative privileges. That applies to everything inside MoSpace. So just like the Merlin handle, don't mess with other people's stuff. There's, in theory, there's a collection administrative system, but they're still working a bugs out on that, that just came out with 1.6, and that they're still finding instances where collection level administrators or community level administrators can't do everything they need. So we can go there if we have to, but currently the honor system works.
Yeah. And since we're all, as Harry said, we're all used to it from Merlin, so it's not an issue. But again, if you had, you know, things that you need to put in that have to be really locked down, then certainly pursue that collection level administrator. When someone clicks into a collection, again, they get a collection homepage with a unique URL. Again, the same search options. This copyright statement, just for your information, that is a standard copyright statement. It's very blanket. It's probably going to stay that way for a while. There is a license attached to most space items. We adapted it from the generic DSpace license, ran it past our general counsel, who said, okay, sure. And it gets attached to all items. I can send that to whoever needs it. We are in the process of getting Creative Commons licensing set up. For those of you not familiar with it, Creative Commons is basically a tier of licenses, which give different permissions at each level. And that the level we're pursuing is level 3, which is the most restrictive. And it tells people you can cite this with attribution, but basically you can't do anything else with it. You can't mash it up, you can't commercialize it, you can't profit from it in any way. Our ideal is to have our Creative Commons Level 3 license in place as a default, but give authors an option to ease those restrictions if they so choose, go down to Level 2 and even Level 1 if they so choose. That's still being run past our general counsel. I haven't heard any updates recently, so we'll see. Back to the collection, they get the copyright statement, they can see recent submissions, and if you browse by title, then you get an ordered list alphabetically of all the titles. You click into an item itself. This is your standard view, the title at the top, repeat of the title here in the beginning of the metadata box, the authors. This is an abstract submitted by the authors, which is why it's so long. When we make up abstracts, we try and keep them shorter, because unless someone's really interested in this, you're going to lose them halfway through. The description box holds any kind of additional information a user might use. This one includes an audio file, if there's any software requirements, you need Windows Media Player version 9 or higher, that's where that kind of information would go. This URI, sorry, go ahead.
Just from a cataloging point of view, like when you do the abstracts as opposed to getting them, what criteria? You go through the whole piece to...
No, it's kind of like doing subject headings.
Okay.
Just do enough so you understand what it's about and go.
Just so they can kind of access it.
Exactly. URI, that's the pieces URI. And then this date is the date of issue. On the bottom are the files associated with that item. And you can see we have three different types of files here, a PowerPoint, a PDF, and an MP3. We prefer, whenever possible, to put in PDFs. Simply for accessibility issues. Adobe Reader is free. It's not going anywhere, so people can usually look at any PDF file. Not everyone has access to PowerPoint, and especially lately as the new version of Office has come out, not everyone has access to Office as it is now. When we get something that's not in PDF form, this presentation is an exception. We almost always convert it to PDF form. We use something called Qt Writer. It's a free application, free download. It basically mimics sending something to your printer, and instead of sending it to the printer, it just generates the PDF. It's very cool. That's good for a very basic PDF creation, something quick on the fly. Otherwise, we do have full Adobe to work with. The final part of this brief, believe it or not, brief record, is where the items appear. You can see that it appears, in fact, in two collections, an abstracts and a presentations collection. MostSpace does give you the ability to list items in multiple collections, and as far as I know, unlimited number of collections. So for instance, all our ETDs are in a collection by semester, as well as the home department, the degree granting department collections. So anyone coming in from either side can find them. It's a nice little feature. If someone gets really interested, you can go into the full item record and start seeing some of the breakdown. You see, this does work on Dublin Core. There are more fields than we've used here. It's up to you what you need to use. What we have in works pretty well. Additional information is things like the language code, English, US English. These DC subject fields, you'll see as we do a demonstration later, we put those in at the acquisitions end. They're obviously not LCSH. They are just in there as keywords to help with finding. Then come the LCSH, which the cataloging department puts in behind us. And then you can do things like type. If you have, in this case, it was a conference, so you can put in the meeting name and the corporate name. And so you can really expand or contract this as you need, but this is a basic thing. And then the files and the collections in which it appears again. So this is a basic layout of everything that a user can see on the open web. Here is our nice individual item statistics. Out there watching. So you can see that this particular presentation has had 504 views since 2009, late spring 2009. You can get breakdowns by month. You can see which files have been viewed the most. And then it gives you a nice country and city breakdown as well, just in case you're curious. We did have a little problem recently with is there were bots from South Korea hitting us really hard. But we put them on the list that excludes those URLs from our counts. So we should be okay now. This should be nice accurate counts for you at this point. Okay. For those of you who, are there any questions at this point? You've seen basically what MoSpace is, and they said almost everything in MoSpace is open, so you can go poke around yourselves if you want.
One thing you're probably going to notice eventually, the views up there don't jive with the views down below. You have to know if you can scroll back up there. The number of views up here are views of the actual home page of the item, and then the other is a views of the bit streams. So the numbers are different for a reason. They count different things.
Yeah.
Some people ask.
Okay, for those of you not staying for the second half, I just wanted to show you, this is our test server. This is what's going to roll out on Sunday night. There are a couple additional features. Log in. The first one you'll see is social networking buttons. So this will sit there and people can tag us, email about us, add us to their Facebook page. And then once you get into an item, just do it this way. This looks like one of our ETDs you got. Yes. You'll see that show full item record is now up here, and the persistent URL is right here above the box. So it's easier for the user to understand this is where I will always find this item. So that's a nice thing. I think that's all the cosmetic changes, yeah.
There's others.
Well, there's more changes, but
yeah.
And those are the cosmetic ones.
Right. The color schemes.
The blue might be a little hard to tell, but if you look at the color along the side here, slightly more blue. Okay, questions at this point? Okay, let's take a break.